It's incredible.
We're up to 29 already. I mean, I thought we were still on the Lamentations for Tyre. I guess we spoke about them last week at length.
Well, I'm just trusting that you're right about what chapter we're on. So Ezekiel 29. Oop. What do you want to say, Martin?
Nope, nothing.
All right. In the 10th year, in the 10th month, in the 12th day of the month, the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and prophesy against him and against all Egypt. Speak and say, Thus saith Yahweh God, Behold, I am against thee, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, the great dragon that lieth in the midst of his rivers, which hath said, My river is mine own, and I have made it for myself. I will put hooks in thy jaws, and I will cause the fish of thy rivers to stick unto thy scales, and I will bring thee up out of the midst of thy rivers, and all the fish of thy rivers shall stick unto thy scales. And I will leave thee thrown into the wilderness, thee and all the fish of thy rivers. Thou shalt fall upon the open fields. Thou shalt not be brought together nor gathered. I have given thee for meat to the beast of the field and to the fowls of the heaven. And all the inhabitants of Egypt shall know that I am Yahweh, because they have been a staff of reed to the house of Israel. When they took hold of thee by thy hand, thou didst break and rend all their shoulder. And when they leaned upon thee, thou breakest and madest all their loins to be out of stand. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh God, Behold, will I bring a sword upon thee, and cut off man and beast out of thee. And the land of Egypt shall be desolate and waste. And they shall know that I am Yahweh, because he hath said, The river is mine, and I have made it. Behold, therefore I am against thee, and against thy rivers. And I will make the land of Egypt utterly waste and desolate, from the tower of Sin, even unto the border of Ethiopia.
This is evidently in the 11th year of Ezekiel's captivity, of the captivity of Jehoiachin. So it seems to be that this prophecy is not against Pharaoh Necho. He died in 595 BC. He died already, it seems, like maybe 2 or 3 years before this prophecy, if this is the 11th year of Ezekiel's captivity, which it states in...
User in your channel timed out.
Okay, chapter 26, the 10th year of Ezekiel's captivity in chapter 29 at the opening. So, I mean, that's where we're at. And we can see there that the chapters in Ezekiel are out of order, and it's going to get worse by the end of this chapter. Well, this has to be the Pharaoh Psamtik II. It must be referring to him, and he died in 589 BC. He was very short-lived. He only ruled for 6 years or thereabouts. And his temple was completely preserved until 1832, and its roof and portions of the temple were removed for construction of an aluminum factory. I'm trying to see how he died real quick. His troops retreated back to the first cataract of the Nile, and Elephine continued to be the southern border of Egypt. He launched an expedition into Palestine in 591 BC to foment a general Levantine revolt against the Babylonians that involved Zedekiah of the kingdom of Judah. So we'll probably read about that. But they're not telling me how he died. The date of his death is mentioned in the adoption stela of some other pharaoh whose name is so long, or some other official whose name is so long I can't even pronounce it. I'm just reading the Wikipedia page. That's all I have at the moment, but they're just not telling me how he died. So, I can't see it here. I can't find it. So it's probably not here. Maybe they just don't know. But he seemed to be on military expeditions at the time. They seem to be temporarily successful in 592 BC. I guess we see the results of that here in the prophets, and that was short-lived if they were successful at all. He suffered some rebellions among his troops. But I can't see how he died. They're not telling me. So I don't have those details. I just don't have them.
So the king of Egypt thought he made the river Nile, did he?
Yeah, you know, those kings were pretty much full of themselves. I mean, I can't vouch for that, but if it's in the scripture, I'm sure it's true that they were full of themselves. They built temples to themselves during their own lifetimes. Basically saw themselves as gods on earth. They were like Doomslayer.
It seems like that could have come from the religion of the fallen angels, where they thought they were god men, just like, you know, you have those half breeds, the giants and things like that. Seems a lot of the paganism of the ancient world has a lot of things in common. Well, should I read verse 11? Anyone else have any comments? Verse 11, no foot of man shall pass through it, nor foot of beast shall pass through it, neither shall it be inhabited 40 years. And I will make the land of Egypt desolate in the midst of countries that are desolate, and her cities among the cities that are laid waste shall be desolate 40 years, and I will scatter the Egyptians among the nations and will disperse them through the countries. Yet thus saith Yahweh God, at the end of 40 years will I gather the Egyptians from the people whither they were scattered, and I will bring again the captivity of Egypt, and will cause them to return into the land of Pathros, into the land of their habitation, and they shall be there a base kingdom. It shall be the basest of the kingdoms, neither shall it exalt itself any more above the nations, for I will diminish them, that they shall no more rule over the nations, and it shall be no more the confidence of the house of Israel, which bringeth their iniquity to remembrance when they shall look after them, but they shall know that I am Yahweh God. And it shall come to pass in the seven and 20th year, in the first month, in the first day of the month, that the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, caused his army to serve a great service against Tyrus. Every head was made bald, and every shoulder was pillaged, yet had he no wages nor his army for Tyrus for the service that he had served against it. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh God, behold, I will give the land of Egypt unto Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, and he shall take it, take her multitude, and take her spoil, and take her prey, and it shall be the wages for his army. I will give him the land of Egypt for his labor wherewith he served against it, because they wrought for me, saith Yahweh God. In that day I will cause the horn of Israel to bud forth, and I will give them the opening of the mouth in the midst of them, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. End of verse, end of chapter 29.
This is something that in history I should look into more deeply, because there's actually disputes in articles on the internet that the Babylonians ever conquered Egypt at all, regardless of what the scripture says. So, I mean, I don't doubt that they're always trying to doubt that. But I think we don't even know how Psamtik died. I also read the, just skimmed the Encyclopedia Britannica article of Pharaoh Psamtik II, and they don't mention anything about his death. They just mentioned some of the events late in his life. So evidently, if they don't know how a pharaoh died, and a notable one, then that they the history is too sketchy to make such a decision or such a gross statement that something never happened in that same period of time.
Yeah, it's hypocritical. It's almost like they have an agenda if they're willing to say one thing based on nothing and another thing.
Right, I mean, it's obvious just from a surface inspection of a couple of websites, a couple of encyclopedias, that they don't have many details from that period, even though an Egyptian pharaoh who had successful military campaigns in the south, in Kush, had died, and it's not recorded why or how. And he was always seemingly in the field. He suffered rebellions from his own troops. He had a victory in Kush. He was defeated. Well, his predecessor was defeated in Carchemish. Necho was defeated in Carchemish, I believe. Yeah, Necho too, his Psamtik's father. These prophecies can't be referring to Necho 2, and they can't be referring to Carchemish, because that's already past us by this point. They have to be referring to Psamtik 2, and there's evidently no information about his death in 589, which seems kind of premature, right?
I couldn't find a commentary that mentioned which pharaoh it was, so... So they don't know either. But would Egypt record a defeat? Like if they were conquered by Babylon, would they necessarily record that? I mean, it would be politically...
Well, right. Bad. Very often they did not record defeats. That they didn't record defeats unless the Babylonians recorded it. And I don't remember whether or not there were Babylonian inscriptions from the Book of Nezar of his conquests in Egypt. I really don't remember that. I could go check. I just can't check like right now. The Egyptians usually erased evidence of their disgraces. And they did that typically. So you're right, it's not likely that they would record it. a lot of pharaohs erased or obliterated all the memory of their predecessors too. And that's well known to have happened in the 19th dynasty. We're a little later here. We're in like the 26th dynasty. They're not really telling me when this Pharaoh Psamtik was born. So it's difficult to tell how old he was, but his father and predecessor was Necho II. And Necho II ruled for 15 years, but Psamtik only ruled for six. I mean, Herodotus remembers Psamtik and Necho, but I can't remember what he said about them. I mean, I remember some of the things he said about Necho. And he actually recorded the battle between Necho en route to the Battle of Carchemish. He was en route to Carchemish. And Josiah, the king of Judah, Josiah, the king of Judah, tried to prevent Necho from passing through Phoenicia or Israel, right? Palestine. And Josiah died in that battle. That was 612 BC. The famous Battle of Carchemish happened a little later when the Babylonians were taking it back. I believe. Oh, Josiah was killed in 609 BC. I think I have it as 608. It says 609 here. 612 BC is when the Assyrian cities were destroyed, Nineveh. Any other cities of Assyria. That's about all I can say about that. That's useful. If it's really useful. And there are details that we don't have. We don't know how this Pharaoh Psamtik died.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions about this one.
Yeah, but some of the questions we may not be able to answer. Like the things that it said about the Pharaoh of Egypt, I'm sure it's referring to Psamtik II. It could be referring to a later Pharaoh. However, we don't even know how Psamtik II died, who was evidently the Pharaoh while this prophecy was being recorded by Ezekiel. So it seems to refer to him, but we don't know how he died. Now, look at verse 17, and it came to pass in the 7th and 20th year, in the first month, and at the beginning of, where is it? At the beginning of verse 20 of chapter, and let's go all the way back to Ezekiel chapter 1, is the 5th year of Jehoiachin's captivity. And I'm imagining that that's the year he means as he progresses through his book, that year he's referring to. So in the 6th year, it's at Ezekiel chapter 8, verse 1. In the 7th year, it's Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 1. In the 9th year, it's chapter 24. In the 11th year, it's chapter 26. But now we're back at the 10th year here in chapter 29, which is kind of weird. So evidently the Lamentations for Tyre and the Prince of Tyre should be after this chapter. But now at the end of this chapter, we're in the 27th year, in the 7th and 20th year, in the first month and the first day.
Microphone muted.
Son of man, the book of King of Babylon causes Omri to do a service, great service against Tyrus. Yeah, you know, the taking of Tyre, the mainland city of Tyre by the Babylonians happened after the fall of Jerusalem. So somehow this piece here ended up way out of place. And then in the end of Ezekiel chapter 30, we're back in the 11th year. So this whole section is probably out of place. Far out of place. It should be very close to the end of Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 40 is the 25th year of our captivity. So this should be after Ezekiel chapter 40. But who knows how much of this should be after Ezekiel chapter 40? Is it everything up to verse 20 of chapter 30? I mean, we may not be able to really tell that. Vern produced a study on the correct order of the chapters of Ezekiel and published it in the Christiania Forum. I can't approve of it without studying it, and I haven't had the chance to study it yet. I probably won't study it until I actually decide to do a commentary on Ezekiel, if I live that long.
Microphone muted.
I'll try. That's about all I have to say about this chapter. Unless there's questions or anything. Or other points that y'all think should be raised.
Nope. I think I'll just read the next chapter, Bill.
Chapter 30.
The word of Yahweh came again unto me, saying, Son of man, prophesy and say, Thus saith Yahweh God, How ye, woe worth the day! For the day is near, even the day of Yahweh is near. A cloudy day, it shall be the time of the heathen,
microphone
the
activated.
Nations. And the sword shall come upon Egypt, and great pain shall be in Ethiopia, when the slain shall fall in Egypt, and they shall take away her multitude. And her foundations shall be broken down. Ethiopia and Libya and Lydia and all the mingled people and Chub and the men of the land that is in league shall fall with them by the sword. Thus saith Yahweh. They also that uphold Egypt shall fall, and the pride of her power shall come down. From the tower of Sion shall they fall in it by the sword, saith Yahweh God. And they shall be desolate in the midst of the countries that are desolate, and her city shall be in the midst of the cities that are wasted. And they shall know that I am Yahweh, when I have set a fire in Egypt, and when all her helpers shall be destroyed. In that day shall messengers go forth from me in ships to make the careless Ethiopians afraid, and great pain shall come upon them, as in the day of Egypt, for lo, it cometh. Thus saith Yahweh God, I will also make the multitude of Egypt to cease by the hand of Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon. He and his people with him, the terrible of the nations, shall be brought to destroy the land, and they shall draw their swords against Egypt and fill the land with the slain.
all the mingled people. The word is Arab, of course, for which Strong's has evening, night, or sunset, which is one sense of the definition, but it's not the appropriate sense here. Secondarily, he has mingled people. Brown Driver Briggs, the same word, Arab, they define it as wool as mixed or interwoven with warp. So that's they don't really elaborate on a definition of this word very well. They really don't, but it clearly means mixed from both definitions. All the mixed people. And you can see that the word Arab means mixed right there in those two definitions, but they try to put it as subtly as possible, I think. I really think they go out of their way to write those definitions so that they aren't so brutally honest. When they should be brutally honest.
Well, that's what you want in a definition, isn't it?
Now, in spite of the prophecies against the lamentation for Tyre, the prince of Tyre, the prophecies against Tyre, in the midst of those lamentations, and the prophecy against Pharaoh, here it seems to me that this is out of place, because here the prophecy of the destruction of Egypt is in a context where Tyre has already been destroyed. And I'm pretty sure that it's Jeremiah that portrays the destruction of Tyre as the reason why Nebuchadnezzar would be rewarded with conquering Egypt. And I can't remember where that is, but that's how it seems to me. I think I may have mentioned that. Somewhere in my writing.
All right. Is that all you've got to say about that one, Bill?
I think so.
Yeah, this is pretty straightforward, these verses. So I might just continue on. And I will make the rivers dry and sell the land into the hand of the wicked. And I will make the land waste and all that is therein by the hand of strangers. I, Yahweh, have spoken it. Thus saith Yahweh God, I will also destroy the idols, and I will cause their images to cease out of Noph, and there shall be no more a prince of the land of Egypt. And I will put fear in that land of Egypt. And I will make Pathros desolate, and I will set fire in Zoan, and will execute judgments in No, and I will pour out my fury upon Sin, the strength of Egypt, and I will cut off the multitude of No. And I will set fire in Egypt. Sin shall have great pain, and No shall be rent asunder, and Noph shall have distresses daily. The young man of Avon and Pisbeseth and of Pibseth shall fall by the sword, and these cities shall go into captivity. At Tahath-Phenes also the day shall be darkened, when I shall break there the yokes of Egypt, and the pomp of her strength shall cease in her. As for her, a cloud shall cover her, and her daughters shall go into captivity. Thus will I execute judgments in Egypt, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. And it came to pass in the 11th year, in the first of the month, in the 7th day of the month, that the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, I have broken the arm of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and lo, it shall not be bound up to be healed, to put a roller to bind it, to make it strong, to hold the sword. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh God, Behold, I am against Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and will break his arms, the strong and that which was broken, and I will cause the sword to fall out of his hand. And I will scatter the Egyptians among the nations, and will disperse them through the countries. And I will strengthen the arms of the king of Babylon and put my sword in his hand. But I will break Pharaoh's arms, and he shall groan before him with the groanings of a deadly wounded man. But I will strengthen the arms of the king of Babylon, and the arms of Pharaoh shall fall down, and they shall know that I am Yahweh, when I shall put my sword into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall stretch it out upon the land of Egypt. And I will scatter the Egyptians among the nations and disperse them among the countries, and they shall know that I am Yahweh.
Okay, I have a little clarification. In Jeremiah chapter 44, thus saith Yahweh, behold, I will give Pharaoh Hophra, king of Egypt, into the hand of his enemies and into the hand of them that seek his life, as I gave Zedekiah, king of Judah, into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, his enemy, and that sought his life. So we see in Jeremiah, and this dating of this being the 27th year in Ezekiel, we see that this wouldn't come upon Egypt until after Jerusalem and the mainland part of Tyre were already destroyed. And then this would come upon the Egyptians, and that's explicit in Jeremiah chapter 44, where it talks about Pharaoh Hophra. And Pharaoh Hophra was already Pharaoh when Jeremiah wrote those words. Hophra was the son of Samtiktu, so and the grandson of Necho. So we have Necho died in 595, Samtiktu died in 589. Hophra comes to the throne, and he dies in 570. And he was evidently killed when he was deposed in a military revolt, in an Egyptian military revolt. And it's evident that the military was revolting because of all the wars with the Babylonians. Seems to be the primary reason for it. I would have to read a lot into that, further into that, to make sure that that's the case. But it was Hophra that was feeding the island of Tyre when Nebuchadnezzar had it under siege, and that's how Tyre was evidently able to withstand the Babylonians. The mainland city was destroyed by the Babylonians, of course, but the island city was not.
So the clarification you're making is to do with the timing?
That the king that suffered in these prophecies is Pharaoh Hophra, and also the timing, yes. That this wouldn't happen until after Tyre was destroyed.
And so a lot of the mainstream critics, are they placing the timing wrong and claiming that the Bible is wrong because they're putting it with Necho? And they're saying, "Oh well, look, that never happened," and it definitely wasn't Necho. So is that what's
yeah? There's probably more than one reason why they're wrong, but they're certainly wrong, and that is a part of it.
It just seems to me that sometimes a lot of their criticisms to do with Egyptian history is because they've misdated the events of Egyptian history. So, you know, like the date of the Exodus, they mistimed that and put it with a different pharaoh, and then they say, well, it never happened. But it what they've actually done is misrepresented the timeline, sort of thing. And it seems like that could be what's happening here again.
Yeah. Hophra had failed to, he suffered a defeat at Cyrene on the coast of the Mediterranean, trying to take that, and that was the cause of his demise.
All right, well, I'm going to continue with chapter 31 then.
There are no more questions about chapter 32. Or chapter 30, I'm sorry. Okay.
Chapter 31. And it came to pass in the 11th year, in the third month, in the first day of the month, that the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, speak unto Pharaoh of Egypt, and to his multitude, Whom art thou like in thy greatness? Behold, the Assyrian was a cedar in Lebanon, with fair branches, and with a shadowing shroud, and of an high stature, and his top was among the thick boughs. The waters made him great, the deep set him up on high, with her rivers running around, running round about his plants, and sent out her little rivers unto all the trees of the field. Therefore his height was exalted above all the trees of the field, and his boughs were multiplied, and his branches became long because of the multitude of the waters when he shot forth. All the fowls of heaven made their nest in his boughs, and under his branches did all the beasts of the field bring forth their young, and under his shadow dwelt all great nations. Thus was he fair in his greatness, in the length of his branches, for his root was by great waters. The cedars in the garden of God could not hide him. The fir trees were not like his boughs, and the chestnut trees were not like his branches, nor any tree in the garden of God was like unto him in his beauty. I have made him fair by the multitude of his branches, so that all the trees of Eden that were in the garden of God envied him. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh God, because thou hast lifted up thyself in height, and hast shot up his top among the thick boughs, and his heart is lifted up in his height, I have therefore delivered him into the hand of the mighty one of the nations. He shall surely deal with him. I have driven him out for his wickedness. And strangers, the terrible of the nations, have cut him off and have left him. Upon the mountains, in all the valleys, his branches are fallen, and his boughs are broken by all the rivers of the land. And all the people of the earth are gone down from his shadow and have left him. Upon his ruin shall all the fowls of the heaven remain, and all the beasts of the field shall be upon his branches, to the end that none of the trees by the waters exalt themselves for their height, neither shoot up their top among the thick boughs, neither their trees stand up in their height, all that drink water, for they are all delivered unto death, to the nether parts of the earth, in the midst of the children of men, with them that go down to the pit. Thus saith Yahweh God, in the day when he went down to the grave, I caused a mourning. I covered the deep for him, and I restrained the floods thereof. And the great waters were stayed, and I caused Lebanon to mourn for him, and all the trees of the field fainted for him. I made the nations to shake at the sound of his fall, when I cast him down to hell with that descend into the pit. And all the trees of Eden, the choice and the best of Lebanon, all that drink the water, shall be comforted in the nether parts of the earth. They also went down into hell with him, unto them that be slain with the sword, and they that were his arm, that dwelt under his shadow in the midst of the nations. To him art thou thus like in glory and in greatness among the trees of Eden, yet shall thou be brought down with the trees of Eden unto the nether parts of the earth. Thou shalt lie in the midst of the uncircumcised, with them that be slain by the sword. This is Pharaoh and all his multitude, saith Yahweh God.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of poetic allegory here.
All the trees of Eden, Bill, who are they?
Yeah, the trees of Eden, they're all branches or sprouts from the tree of life, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry?
Yeah. Well, that's the Adamic race, the trees of Eden.
Well, it's saying here that they're going to hell, so that obviously doesn't mean hell in a certain sense. It means hell as in death. doesn't it? I mean, these are endemic nations, Bill.
Hell, Hades. Thou shalt lie in the midst of the uncircumcised with them that be slain by the sword. Is that really hell? That's Sheol, which is the grave, or the underworld abode of the dead. That's speaking about temporal destruction. It's not necessarily speaking about the fate of the spirit.
Yeah, because all the trees of Eden, they're all Adamic, so...
And they all went to Sheol. Samuel went to Sheol. Didn't Saul have Samuel raised up from Sheol?
Yeah.
And all the heathen nations, they were definitely alienated from God. So that's where they go when they die. Sheol.
Well, I mean, before the cross of Christ, this went where they died.
Yeah, now we just go directly to him.
1 Peter chapters 3 and 4. Well, this whole Trees of Eden, it's a reference to all the Genesis 10 nations of the world at the time, right? Starting with the Assyrians. And the same thing that would happen, that happened to the Assyrians, would happen to the Egyptians. Well, in this chapter, we're back in the 11th year, right? We're back 26 years before the last chapter. We see that pattern a lot, where Jeremiah also had prophesied of the coming destruction of Judah for many years before it actually happened. Is there anything else here?
All right, well, I'll read 32 then.
Yeah, we might. Somebody don't talk. We might be done with Ezekiel tonight.
It's all pretty straightforward, though.
Yeah, it is. It's all prophecies against Pharaoh and Egypt for the most part, even if they're out of order.
Ezekiel 32. And it came to pass in the 12th year, in the 12th month, in the first day of the month, that the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation for Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and say unto him, Thou art like a lion of the nations, and thou art as a whale in the seas, and thou camest forth with thy rivers, and troublest the waters with thy feet, and foulest their rivers. Thus saith Yahweh God, I will therefore spread out my net over thee with a company of many people, and they shall bring thee up in my net. Then will I leave thee upon the land. I will cast thee forth upon the field, and will cause all the fowls of the heaven to remain upon thee, and I will fill the beast of the whole earth with thee. And I will lay thy flesh upon the mountains and fill the valleys with thy height. I will also water with thy blood the land wherein thou swimmest, even to the mountains, and the rivers shall be full of thee. And when I shall put thee out, I will cover the heaven and make the stars thereof dark. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon shall not give her light. All the bright lights of heaven will I make dark over thee, and set darkness upon the land, saith Yahweh God. I will also vex the hearts of many people, when I shall bring thy destruction among the nations into the countries which thou hast not known. Yea, I will make many people amazed at thee, and their king shall be horribly afraid for thee, when I shall brandish my sword before them, and they shall tremble at every moment, every man for his own life in the day of thy fall. For thus saith Yahweh God, the sword of the king of Babylon shall come upon thee.
You dropped out a few times on me in different verses, and I don't think it's you. I think it's me, David.
Oi, Dave, could you hear me reading all that? Martin?
You were fine.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was my connection. It keeps dropping. This is all more of it's more the same. It's basically, it parallels the prophecies in Jeremiah, which I just referred to. Jeremiah chapter 44, Jeremiah chapter 46. But Jeremiah names the prophet, names the Pharaoh explicitly, which I don't think Ezekiel does. There's not much more I could say than that.
Yeah. Well, that's a cool verse at verse 10. That's all I can say. When I shall brandish my sword before them, and they shall tremble at every moment. That's what happens when the judgment of God comes upon a nation. They're trembling at every moment. They'll learn to fear God one way or the other.
I will send black smoke rings into your televisions, and I'm sorry.
That'll wake them up. All right, from verse 12. By the swords of the mighty will I cause thy multitude to fall, the terrible of the nations, all of them. And they shall spoil the pomp of Egypt, and all the multitude thereof shall be destroyed. I will destroy all the beasts thereof from beside the great waters, neither shall the foot of man trouble them any more, nor the hoofs of beasts trouble them. Then I will make their waters deep and cause their rivers to run like oil, saith Yahweh God. When I shall make the land of Egypt desolate, and the country shall be desolate of that whereof it was full, when I shall smite all of them that dwell therein, then shall they know that I am Yahweh. This is the lamentation wherewith they shall lament her. The daughters of the nations shall lament her. They shall lament her even for Egypt and for all her multitude, saith Yahweh God. It came to pass also in the 12th year, in the 15th day of the month, that the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, wail for the multitude of Egypt and cast them down, even her and the daughters of the famous nations, unto the nether parts of the earth, with them that go down into the pit. Whom dost thou pass in beauty? Go down, and be thou laid with the uncircumcised. They shall fall in the midst of them that are slain by the sword. She is delivered to the sword. Draw her and all her multitudes. The strong among the mighty shall speak to them out of the midst of hell. With them that help him, they are gone down. They lie uncircumcised, slain by the sword. Asher is there, and all her company. His graves are all about him, are about him. All of them slain, fallen by the sword, whose graves are set in the sides of the pit, and her company is round about her grave, all of them slain, fallen by the sword, which caused terror in the land of the living. There is Elam and all her multitude round about her grave, all of them slain, fallen by the sword, which are gone down uncircumcised into the nether parts of the earth, which caused their terror in the land of the living. Yet have they borne their shame with them that go down to the pit. They have set her bed in the midst of the slain with all her multitude. Her graves are round about him, all of them uncircumcised, slain by the sword, though their terror was caused in the land of the living. Yet have they borne their shame with them that go down to the pit. He is in the midst of them that be slain. There is Meshech, Tubal, and all her multitude. Her graves are round about him, all of them uncircumcised, slain by the sword, though they cause their terror in the land of the living. And they shall not lie with the mighty that are fallen of the uncircumcised, which are gone down to hell with their weapons of war. And they have laid their swords under their heads, but their iniquity shall be upon their bones. Though they were the terror of the mighty in the land of the living, yea, thou shalt be broken in the midst of the uncircumcised, and shall lie with them that are slain with the sword. There is Edom, her kings and her princes, which with their might are laid by them that were slain by the sword. They shall lie with the uncircumcised and with them that go down to the pit. There be the princes of the north, all of them, and all the Zidonians, which are gone down with the slain. With their terror they are ashamed of their might, and they lie uncircumcised with them that be slain by the sword, and bear their shame with them that go down to the pit. Pharaoh shall see them, and shall be comforted over all his multitude, even Pharaoh and all his army slain by the sword, saith Yahweh God. For I have caused my terror in the land of the living, and he shall be laid in the midst of the uncircumcised with them that are slain with the sword, even Pharaoh and his multitude, saith Yahweh God. So all these people, you know, going down in the pit, and they're all uncircumcised.
Which would be a shame, I gather. I mean, it would, in the perspective of the Israelites, it would be a shame. It's not would really it mean, a shame.
Well, yeah, at that time. And would it mean like they're profane people, they're common people, because they're not consecrated to God? They don't care about God.
Right. And all the wars they made. I mean, those the rulers, the Egyptians, the pharaohs, the king of Babylon, the kings of the Assyrians, they all tried to take over the world, so to speak, at diverse times, even the Persians. They all openly sought to rule the world in a short space of a couple hundred years.
Microphone activated.
So this is basically mocking them all that are going into the pit uncircumcised.
Yeah, he lists them all, and he says that they're all going, all their multitude round about a grave, all of them slain. So that's what happens when God comes against you. It's just death everywhere.
Well, right. It may have taken a century or two centuries or three centuries, but where was Egypt? Even during the Macedonian period, Egypt was Greek. It wasn't Egyptian at all. The Egyptians were totally marginalized in their own land. And by then, the Assyrians were gone. They couldn't be found. The Sidonians no longer had any real national identity, so to speak, even though they were mingled up with Romans and Greeks and the so-called Phoenicians, right? The Sidonians were actually Canaanites, though.
You see how all most of these nations are uncircumcised. Well, in reference to Egypt, it says, son of man, wail for Egypt and cast them down. Who dost thou pass in beauty? Go down and be thou laid with the uncircumcised. And I've heard that Egypt did practice circumcision, so maybe the Egyptians are circumcised and are being laid with the uncircumcised. Do you see that at verse 18?
Yes, I didn't pick up on that, but you're right. I believe the Egyptians were circumcised. They did practice circumcision in ancient Egypt.
Would that be a credit to them, or does that mean that there's some sort of God reverence with them? You know, is it a credit to them that they're circumcised because now they're laying?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because they weren't circumcised on his account. But they were uncircumcised. That they were circumcised, so he couldn't call them uncircumcised. So they're going to lay with the uncircumcised. They're no better than the uncircumcised. They're no better than the uncircumcised.
Yeah.
Wasn't it Joseph who married the daughter of the priest of On?
Yeah, but that was a long time before this. That was 1,200 years before this.
So that On, could that be like their like word for Yahweh?
I don't know where or why they have that name On.
Not their word for Yahweh.
I don't think it's really a word for Yahweh. I think it's probably some on seems to be a place.
It may be a place too. It may have been a place too, but it is another way of saying Osiris. Like if you remember, Martin, when we talked about Freemasonry and how they say Yabal on, that's what they call the Almighty. They openly say that they combined the three major deities of the ancient world in the Near East and civilized area, which was Yahweh, Baal, and On, Osiris.
Well, that could be. That's not.
Then that would mean that Joseph had married a pagan.
Yeah, but
right.
Sort of like millions of Israelites, right? It's just, I mean, even Jacob did, right? So you basically had to. There were no other white people. Joseph didn't have a choice.
The patriarchs married Goyim, Martin. They're all race mixed. I'm being facetious, right? How did the sons of Jacob marry Israelites? Explain.
No, I'm not saying that they married the sons of or the daughters of Israelites, but that, I mean, you would think that they would have married righteous women, right?
It would have been what?
That they would have married righteous women. That if, you know, that they came, that they worshiped the same God.
Where in Egypt? At the time of Joseph?
No. You were talking about Jacob?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if they were righteous at all. They were just white ladies. And the reason the issue, the sons and the...
That we shouldn't be yoked with unbelievers?
Yeah, but no, not at that time. And the thing is, actually, even not at the time of Paul, because he said, keep your pagan wives, right?
Yep.
But the son or the daughter is an Israelite. It goes by the male line. It doesn't matter what the woman is. If I marry a German woman, she's still what I am. The child is still what I am, right? It's patriarchal. It's not, you know, people say,
as long as the woman's Adamic.
Yeah, as long as she's Adamic.
That's all that matters, Martin.
And I'm German. If I'm German and I marry a French lady, the child is German. It's not German and French. I mean, that's
but
just
it's a
modern
frog.
Yeah, it's German.
And, you know, like God called Israel out to marry her and she was pagan. She didn't know anything about Yahweh, and he calls her out and he marries her. She doesn't know him at all. you know, I'm talking, when I say she, I mean like the nation. So God married a pagan, essentially. So that's the model I use, because why should a white man have to do any different? There, women out there might not know Yahweh, but if they if you marry a white woman, she's a Christian anyways, basically. She's a Christian by race.
Martin, you have to remember, you got to memorize the Christiania New Testament version of 2 Corinthians chapter 6, right? The King James just got it wrong, Martin. They all have it wrong. I don't care that I'm the only one that says so. They all have it wrong. Paul's not saying don't be joined to unbelievers. He's not saying that.
Untrustworthy aliens, is it? In?
Yeah, it's untrustworthy aliens. It's in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, he told them to stay with their pagan wives or pagan husbands if the pagan wives or husbands would put up with them. And you're not going to tell me that he meant unbelievers when he wrote 2 Corinthians, which was actually written about 6 months after 1 Corinthians was written. Maybe not even 6 months. Yeah, it's probably about 6 or 9 months, I think.
If a pagan wife agreed to stay with a Christian husband, wouldn't she have to live by the Christian laws anyways? Because the law of the husband, so she'd have to basically live by Christian law, so she's basically a Christian in action.
Yes. And it's action that counts. It's not belief that counts, it's action that counts. It's how you live your life that counts, not what you say with your lips. Otherwise, you're just doomed if you don't say 10 Hail Marys and light a candle. And leave $20 in the collection box.
Well, is there any significance to Meshach and Tubal here?
Well, I mean, this shows that Meshach and Tubal were in that region, and Herodotus also puts them in that region as Maski and Tabani, and this links them with the princes of the north. And by the way, David, the Septuagint equates on to Heliopolis, and Heliopolis was an ancient city that in the Nile Delta that was well known to the Greeks, which is why they had that Heliopolis, and I think it's also Beth Shemesh in scripture, and I wrote about that early on in my writings.
Yeah, and my understanding is that Heliopolis, that meant the city of the sun, and Osiris's father was Ra, and they created a merged god of Ra and Osiris.
Yes, I understand that. I do understand all that. They were probably closer to the truth in Joseph's time, though, than they were in later times.
Yeah, like they wouldn't even eat pork in Egypt, right? And even if a man touched a pig, he would immediately go jump in the river and clean himself, like accidentally touch the pig, like a pig brushed up against him.
Right.
And they had only certain pig herders that would, because they needed pigs for a purpose. And that was like something you would inherit from your father. You would be a pig farmer, and then, but you know, that was I'm assuming they use them for garbage cleanup, right?
Well, that's why I take Beth Shemesh as a double entendre, but I can't prove that. I wrote about that 20 years ago. That was a double entendre. It could mean house of the sun, or it could mean house of the people of Shem. It could mean either one.
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean,
another thing is the Egyptians had a big sign on their border saying any nigger who crosses this border is dead.
Do you have a citation for that?
It was in the early kingdom. It might not have said exactly what I say, but I remember an MRED article about it or something like that. And it was like there was a sign, they found an inscription, and it said something about Nubians. Any Nubian crossing this, you know, is dead. Something like that. Just to add to the pig thing, you know, because you said that they don't eat pigs. Well, there's another thing, good thing the Egyptians did. They started out, you know, nationalistic, and then a while later they became corrupted.
Yeah, but I remember Bill had a podcast where you mentioned, Bill, that even in ancient Greece, there were certain city-states that would not eat pork.
Right.
So a lot of people just knew. I mean, you know, people in the ancient world were smart enough to realize, you know, how it makes you feel and other effects of it. And they can see how quickly it rots and so forth, you know.
Well, the progressives always get their way. The perverts, they call them progressives, but they're perverts. They always get their way.
Does pork meat rot quicker than...
Very quickly, yeah. Way quicker than beef, for example. Room temperature. It's the roundworms, right? They're little tiny parasites that it's just littered with parasites.
It doesn't surprise me that it just turns to rot so quickly. It doesn't surprise me at all.
I've seen it happen in like a day, like half a day, you know, in the sun, outdoors.
Tracks all the flies.
It starts bubbling up. Like toxic waste, you know, like walk by one of those fenced ponds near the toxic waste factory or whatever. It kind of looks like that.
Maybe I'll do some experiments this summer and get me a piece of screen or a glass bowl or something and put it under a pork chop in the sun.
Well, if it's sliced really thinly, if you slice it thinly, you'll see it. I don't know if something as thick as a pork chop, if that would happen that quickly. But like I'm talking about prosciutto, and they slice it really thin and, you know, sitting out in the sun.
Man, when I was a kid, I loved prosciutto.
Yeah, well, I did too. But, you know, I also like Big Macs, and that's garbage as well.
Gabagool, prosciutto. Ah. They knew how to, those Italians knew how to pickle their meat. They didn't do it like the Irish do it. They just do corned beef. They don't throw any spices in with it. I swear. The British food is the blandest freaking food.
Yeah.
Okay, I haven't eaten that since probably about 93, 94, but that's all right. I don't need it. I can live without it.
Yes, I'm.
Jesus died so that we could eat clean pigs in the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah, right. So you could eat a ham sandwich, as Clifton used to say.
Yeah, there are people who would believe that.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And engage in using it too. I mean, there's a long laundry list of things. Churches say are okay.
Jesus died so you can do whatever you want. Jesus died so you can party. It's basically Satanism, you know. That's what Jesus supports somehow. It's all a big joke. A lot of churches are like that.
User disconnected from your channel.
Their whole congregation just eats pork and does whatever.
Yeah, all the churches, they're all like that. As far as I know, that they're all into race mixing, eating pork. Jesus saves everybody, even pigs. Two-legged pigs, four-legged pigs, don't matter. The reconciliation of all things. Yeah, I guess we're done here, David.
Okay.